Today, we find out what the Fed said behind closed doors last month. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. The FOMC, that's the group at the Federal Reserve that decides whether and how to influence interest rates in the economy, it's releasing its minutes from last month's meeting a month later, as it traditionally does. Susan Schmidt is Senior Vice President and Portfolio Manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas and joins us to help us understand why we care about the Fed's thinking. Good morning, Susan.
Good morning.
So today we are going to get the minutes from last month's Federal Reserve FOMC meeting. People will be parsing those, I assume, for insight on what the Fed thinks about the economy, inflation moving forward?
That's exactly right. Remember that the volatility and the movement that we had in the market at the beginning of February was really triggered by concerns over inflation. And there's a lot of speculation on whether the Fed will raise interest rates 3 or 4 times this year and how they will handle the pace of that.
Aside from how we think the economy is going to do, what's going to happen with inflation, what are numbers telling us about how it's doing right now? What are the numbers saying that presumably the Fed is also considering?
Well, the underlying economy continues to be strong. We just had European producer manufacturing index numbers come out this morning, and those were very positive. We are winding down on earnings season here in the U.S., and for the most part, earnings have been strong, sales have been strong, and additionally, McKinsey Global Institute in San Francisco came out with a report today speculating that productivity is actually going to increase to about 2% a year. That's huge if that were to happen, because since our recovery, we've been growing with productivity at about 0.5% a year. So productivity is a key to growing GDP. If that 2% were to come to fruition, that would be great for the economy. It might cause the Fed to rethink things. And then, of course, the market is going to be looking at all of this, trying to figure out which direction things are going.
All right. Susan Schmidt, Senior Vice President, Portfolio Manager at Westwood Holdings Group in Dallas. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
A panel of Texas lawmakers is going to meet today to take a hard look at how that state funds higher education each year. This is something legislatures across the country have been struggling with, not just how to fund higher education, but also how to contain rising tuition costs. And a lot of eyes will be on Texas. Marketplace's Renata Sago has more.
States use a variety of formulas to finance their colleges and universities. In Texas, schools get money based on the credit hours they offer. Then there's money for so-called special items, such as new research, a facility, or programs that somehow stay special.
Over time, it's become annually renewed without necessarily evaluating what's happened with the program.
Susan Schaefer is an analyst for Moody's. She says earmarking is attractive because it's flexible. Not every school qualifies for special item funding, though. Sarah Pingle is with the Education Commission of the States. She says that's because every state has its politics.
When individual institutions are able to approach and lobby the legislature for funding outside of what's allowed in the formula, there are certainly always going to be winners and losers.
Many states have moved to performance-based formulas to fund higher education. But for some colleges and universities, the default solution in a tough funding environment remains the same. Raise tuition. I'm Renata Sago for Marketplace.
It is winter, if you haven't noticed, and the last thing most people want to do is work outside. And yet, cities across the country are in the midst of a multi-year building boom. Developers are racing to meet pent-up demand for housing and office space. There are billions of dollars in play and deadlines to meet, and so the work really doesn't usually stop, even in winter. From WCPN in Cleveland, Adrian Ma has this look at how one construction crew is dealing with sub-freezing temperatures.
I'm in downtown Cleveland, walking around the site of what will eventually be a high-rise apartment building costing over $60 million. The scaffolding and equipment are covered in snow, and the temperature is 5 degrees. It's the kind of cold that makes your hands go numb.
Right. You can feel it in your nose, too, when you breathe.
That's the project manager for Arbor Construction, Bill Trump. No relation to the president. He says the site canceled production today because when it gets this cold, even basic tasks become impossible. You can't pour concrete because it'll freeze. You can't weld because the metal will actually crack. You can't even use the porta-johns because the liquid inside turns to ice.
I make sure I'm done before I get here so I don't have to use those.
Even with these challenges, Trump says the decision to stop work isn't easy. Like most big building projects, his contract has a penalty clause that kicks in if the job is late. In this case, the damage could be $4,000 a day. A couple days later, it is still freezing. But laborer Kai Yi says he's glad to be back.
Yeah, I gotta pay bills.
And he tells me the secret to working in icy temperatures.
You suck it up. You gotta suck it up. That's all to it.
Of course, he says you gotta watch out for frostbite. And you gotta watch your step. According to a Labor Department study, on-the-job falls that result in bone fractures occur most often in the winter.
A little heat in here.
To warm up, Carpenter Thomas Crew and I duck into a room they call the shanty. Basically a plywood shack with some propane heaters in it. He says just don't be caught spending too much time in here.
Nobody out here wants to be the weak one, you know, per se. So a lot of times your pride and ego keep you out there longer than you really should be as a health concern. If I had a dollar for every time I said I think I got frostbite, I wouldn't be out here.
He says don't feel sorry for him, though. Come spring, when it's 70 degrees and sunny outside, he says he'll be the lucky one. In Cleveland, I'm Adrian Ma for Marketplace.
Vice President Mike Pence will be, we expect, promoting the private spaceflight industry today at Florida's Kennedy Space Center. Pence is expected to recommend making it easier to launch commercial spacecraft and reduce regulations on the industry that could one day cover everything from launching satellites to maybe mining on asteroids. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.